Welcome everyone to this interview where I am super excited to be talking with Rafia Morgan. Firstly, Rafia, welcome and thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Alex. It's really lovely to be with you and I look forward as always to our interviews.
We've done this a few times over the years, haven't we? We always have fun together. We were just saying before we started recording that we never seem to do much planning, and yet we seem to always have a bit of magic that comes out in the conversation, which is part of what I really appreciate about our connection. Just to give people a little bit of a frame, we're going to be talking about some of what causes relationships to get stuck, particularly some of the shadow stuff, the disowned stuff that we can have, the defensiveness that comes up in relationships, and some of the ways that we can work with that to find some freedom and space from it. Just to give people a little bit of Rafia's background, since 1976, Rafia Morgan has been deeply involved with spiritual and personal growth work. After completing his BA in economics at UC Berkeley, he recognized a personal need to move away from social and political action and focus on inner exploration. In 1978, he met his spiritual master and spent many years in his presence. And over the years, he's passionately investigated his own inner world and has thus participated and trained in innumerable spiritual and therapeutic approaches. Since 1977, he's been conducting workshops and trainings around the world. And his background, enthusiasm, and commitment to spiritual awakening, his love of people, of life, and discovery of human potential, give him vast resource to help people in personal growth work. And I should also say that Rafia, alongside Taria Hanover, is the co-founder of the Path of Love process, which I know that many of the people, many mutual friends of Rafia's and mine have been through that process and have had some really amazing transformative experiences doing that. So Rafia, I think let's just start at the beginning. So in your experience, what causes relationships to get stuck? What is it that, particularly in those more longer term relationships, where that stagnation can start to come in?
Well, there's a number of different levels, but of course, one really simple one is that we come in with our personalities rather than our being. And our personalities basically reflect the traumas and the wounding and our strategies to survive in the environment that we grew up in. And the tragedy of that is that we continue to relate to the world and the people around us as though we're still in that environment, and we're not. We're with another person. And so we bring a big package. Everybody brings a big package. And there can still be a lot of love. There can be a lot of understanding. There can be a lot of insight and everything. But relationships, if there isn't, a thread of commitment and a kind of inquiry that's going along beside the relationship, where each person is delving into themselves and is willing to look at themselves, tend to hit a certain kind of status quo of coexistence together, which lacks the vibrancy and happiness and thrill and often sexual connection that was there at first. And then people settle with that. And of course, there's many reasons why people settle for that, because there's maybe children and work and many things, but a certain dullness comes in. And then those old projections and defensive patterns and stuff become the relationship, and people just coexist. And then it blows out usually by some incident or other that comes up, where the repressed material, the stuff that's been held back, or the stuff that's never even been looked at, you know, the old traumatic things that pattern that personality, the stuff in what we call the shadow, starts to come out. And then, you know, the love can turn to anger, can turn to hate, the addiction things can start to play out, the extra marital or outer relationships come in, and people are not equipped to be able to deal with that because they've been living in a somewhat numbed, defensive way with each other that coexists, but it's not alive and vibrant. So, yeah.
I think the challenge also is that in a sense, everywhere we go, there we are. And initially, when we're dating, we can go to different relationships. And at some point, hopefully, we realize that we're the common denominator in all of those relationships. But when we're in a more long-term relationship, it's like we increasingly can get to the point of frustration there where we act out, let's say someone has an affair, or let's say, as you say, someone starts drinking. And we can sometimes think that's the problem, but often it's the symptom of this underlying issue that you're speaking to.
Exactly. And so what people have to get is that also what you react to that creates that frustration is actually telling you something about yourself. And if you have a practice in place, if you have support of a good therapist or a community that helps you to look at what you're reacting and turn that back towards yourself and see, oh, that's indicating some old pattern of defensiveness or old self-image or old identification that I haven't looked at, then it becomes very interesting. If you don't do that, then your finger is pointing out a lot at the other person, which absolutely creates resistance and counter frustration, projection, and upset with you. And then you just lock into that. And then maybe one day you know something happens and it shifts and you get back into the normal coexisting driving pattern and you go on a bit longer, but it doesn't take long before these issues start coming up more and more. And like you said, frustration then, you know, and it becomes, why are you? And you were never like this before. And I can't stand it when you, and it's true, I can't stand it in that situation. I can't stand with myself and be grounded and deal with my own reaction. It's much easier to blame.
Yeah, yeah. Can we say a little bit about when we talk about shadows or we talk about disowned parts of ourselves, what do we actually mean? Just to give people a bit more context around this.
Well, it's a big subject, of course, but if generally you do have to look back to the holding environment that you grew up in and what was it that got you love? What was it that brought you the things that you wanted? And what were you punished, rejected, humiliated, shamed, made guilty for? And that you patterned your relationship as an intelligent strategy to survive in that home environment. And then all that stuff that wasn't acceptable gets put down in the basement, and yet it's still alive. And we tend to call that, in a very kind of simplistic way, the shadow. It's that stuff and those parts of ourselves which we haven't integrated, which we haven't owned, or we haven't recovered from. And we, from our childhood, and then we seal that generally with patterns of defensiveness so that if something comes close to that, we're activated and ready to protect that which we feel will bring disastrous results if it comes out of the basement. So there's that kind of forbidden door to the basement where a large parts of us live in what we call the shadow. And it brings in all kinds of very interesting things too for people who have some kind of spiritual inkling. A lot of times there's the notion of spiritual bypassing where we create these kind of try and shortcut to the good stuff without dealing with what we're actually carrying around with us all the time. And of course that stuff comes out, and of course it influences not only the defensiveness, but the actual content that's in there, you know? And it can come flying out in some moment with the kids or with the wife or the husband or the in the grocery store or wheresoever.
Often in the rather inconvenient places where we're the least in control of ourselves, right?
Exactly, you know, and then there's, you know, all kinds of mechanisms to close that off. But that's part of who we are. So I don't really think you find very many healthy relationships that don't have a very active way where the partners are willing to look at themselves and let's say what they react to, what comes up, and share about that and go into that and actually be hungry to bring that stuff up, because they know that that makes the relationship richer and it makes them feel at peace and at home with their past and in themselves and in the present.
And of course, one of the other ways that shadows come out is in the projecting those onto other people, right? Like I remember many years ago in a relationship, and I was with someone who had a lot of issues around anger. And I get angry, but that's not my primary place that I tend to go to. I have plenty of other things that I do. But I remember this woman kept saying to me, "You're always so angry." And I was like, the anger, it's not, lots of other things that are happening, but that isn't the primary thing that's coming up. And what was very difficult was the projection of that anger, which was her anger, onto me.
Yeah. And it takes a lot of awareness to be able to understand that without reacting or without playing out what their projection is. Because right. if they're insistent,
then you become angry.
You get angry and they go, see, there you are. You know, so it, and for myself, when that's happening, I feel the reaction inside, and then I feel the personality's well-paved highway towards, you know, retaliation or peacemaking or whatever it might be, you know, and collapse. Or I can bring in curiosity about myself and say, oh, I'm reacting to that. What is that telling me about myself? And so then that brings me back into a more grounded place. And then I can see the person who's projecting on me or who's upset with me with some kind of compassion. Oh, actually, she's really scared right now. And the content that's coming out from that and is being broadcast is not really the important thing. It's me being present with that underlying thing, which might be fear, which might be a visitation of some old trauma and this trauma response. And what I find is that the moment I can, in a grounded and compassionate way, be present with that person and not get all entangled in the content of the projection, the other person feels it. Contact starts to happen between the two of us rather than opposing, ready to fight, defensive characters. And then the content that's being projected starts to just go off like so much smoke off of the real thing that's happening. And then we get down to what's really happening and we can explore that and talk about that in an open way. And the product of that is almost always, or I can really say always, love.
Yes. Yes.
You know, the heart opens, you know, and gladdens because we get down to the truth. And the truth, you know, makes the heart happy.
Yes, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. And yet somehow the first step on that journey is one of responsibility, isn't it? It's taking ownership of our own stuff and our own material.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that we are definitely not trained to do. That is not modeled a lot for us in the world, you know? And so having some sort of practice or being involved with something which gets you to get that self-reflective capacity going and awakens a curiosity inside about who am I really? I know the face, my presenting face of the world. I know the basic personality and the Raffia show, but who am I really underneath that? And to have that underlying curiosity then where I have like a kind of inner inquiry going on at the same time is something that one is not so easy to do because a lot of times I believe in my defensiveness. And it may be related to an old trauma, something that I've had that I've needed to protect and that I'm ready to go to war about, let's say. And but when I apply curiosity and I really activate this thing called love of the truth, who am I really? It does take me in and it takes out that positional opposition that so often just is so unnecessary at a certain point.
Yeah.
Welcoming the things to come up because this is where we're going to grow. This is where we're going to really find out who, and this is then how we renew the relationship. And once that process happens, you know, the love comes again, and there's a renewal rather than just the old deadening status quo looping that so much of us call relationship.
That defensiveness is often, so there's the responsibility piece, but then often, as you say, what comes up is our defensiveness. And I said that in this previous relationship that anger wasn't my thing. According to my wife, very accurately, defensiveness is more my thing. So it's like, well, what happened was early on in our relationship, she would call something out and I would go into, and I'm a very good negotiator. So I'd go into all these rational positions. And we were once doing some couples work, and it was pointed out to me that I could win an argument on defensiveness, but did I want to be right or did I want to be happy? And actually the reality was that it was defense against actually feeling. So I'd love to hear you speak a little bit to the in a sense, the price of defensiveness, but also how do we move beyond it?
Well, I think you just described it really quite well. It's a process of awareness where you, let's use you for an example.
Yes, I guess I offered myself up, didn't I? So.
You did. No, that you can win an argument with your very intelligent and clever mind and disguise the defensiveness as a convincing argument that you're not defensive.
Exactly.
And the other person can't respond to it or feels like, oh, it's me. Or you can start to become aware of the symptoms of when defensiveness is there. And that's a personal thing. Like, how does defensiveness show up in my character? What do I notice? What is my attitude? What is it that, how do I suddenly see the world? What happens in my body energy? What underlying emotions are moving? What is it that in defensiveness that I want to get rid of out of my field that's causing this kind of reaction? And the well-oiled script and highly trained capacity that I also have with that, and to change it, and then it's a point of courage, really, and honesty to say, well, you know what, I right now all I'm notice is that I'm very defensive. And I have to own that, and I don't know what's underneath it, and I don't know why I'm so defensive, but I'm ready to look at it. And when I get defensive, I notice that I become very aggressive, rational, and I can back anybody into a corner and come out of it looking really good, but I was still defensive. And so what is defensiveness? It's defending some part of yourself that you're afraid to own, or you believe on an unconscious level will create rejection, shame, guilt, et cetera, if it comes up. And the thing that's really important here is to have compassion for yourself in that, because that was an intelligent strategy to survive in the holding environment that you grew up in. And so it's not about being wrong. It's about being willing to look at it, because that wasn't allowed. I wasn't able to share that. If I would share that part of myself, I would get whacked. I would get humiliated, whatever. So I've created a defensiveness around that, and I've created something, a compensation for the loss of those capacities to imitate it. You know, the classic theory of holes stuff. If people aren't familiar with, they can read from Hamid Almas. Yeah. It's a very good description of that. And so it just takes a willingness then to start off with, okay, I am being defensive. And already the curiosity indicates openness. Just by the fact of being curious, you put yourself into a space, a kind of liminal space of not knowing. Oh, if I'm curious, I'm also admitting, what is this? There's something here to look at. And by the very nature of that, I'm then open. When I'm defensive, I'm basically close and I'm protecting. So it's an act, and it requires also the development of trust with the partner, very much. So this in my relationship, this is a very ongoing process where we do inquiries, or if something's going on, all of a sudden there's separation in the field, and we're two isolated beings occupying the same space, and we're performing very well, but we're not really connecting. One of us can say, how about just doing a little 10-minute, 15-minute inquiry? And what we know of that is like for each of us to stop and look at ourselves and what's really going on. And that only happens through curiosity. And then it takes courage to look at it. It takes love of the truth to even want to do it. And it takes compassion for myself. Like, oh man, I'm reacting to you just like I did to my mother when I was a kid. I feel like you're criticizing me, and I can't stand it, you know?
And I'd love to hear you say more about that compassion, because it's almost like the quality that is, I think, most deficient when there's defensiveness and there's reactivity is compassion, right? Compassion for ourselves, but also compassion for the other.
Yeah. So when a relationship is in the reactivity, we're basically in our personality, and personality is not wrong. You know, again, the word persona means mask. So somebody way back long ago who was creating language recognized the personality not as the real thing, but that we have these personalities that we bring, which are intelligent strategies to survive in that old environment. And so we're not wrong. We're not trying to get rid of it. We're trying to understand it. And so that, just in that not being wrong, takes away some of the defensiveness and takes away a lot of the attack. You know, there's activation there. This doesn't represent the deepest and truest place in myself, or let's say in my partner, but something is moving, some old trauma is being touched, some defensiveness is coming up, and two defensiveness banging into each other equals fight. Two defensivenesses that have some compassion and understanding woven into them makes a little gentle bumping into each other, and then it opens up into two exposed people talking about themselves. And out of that comes the beauty that we all long for so much, I think, in our relationships, is to connect on that level.
It also somehow moves beyond the black and whiteness that we can go into, right? Like the right and wrong. Like when we get defensive, we're in a place of right is here and wrong is over here. And exactly. The resolution is that you understand that right is here and wrong is over there. And it's like there's something about realizing that almost never is relationship that simple. And of course, there are times of responsibility and where someone has acted in a way that's unskillful and unkind, and there needs to be ownership of that. But I know certainly in my relationship, and I think it's a very common thing, that when we argue, it's because we're trying to argue over who needs to take the blame for something.
Very well said. You know, and so what is the question in that? I think that's...
Well, I guess
it says it very well.
It's a statement of fact. And I guess my question is, what, and I think we've already spoken to this somewhat, but what helps us move beyond the black and white thinking? Like, I think you spoke to love of truth. I think that's a really helpful piece to go, am I more interested in it being right, or am I more interested in actually what's really true here?
Yeah. And that will have its various degrees depending on the level of the activation. And sometimes the intelligence can be, let's just take a few moments and be by ourselves and reflect on this and then come back together. Because as long as there is the blame going on, it may be that I initiated something out of my own shadow and my own repressed material, and I created a fight. But if it's escalated, both of us are involved in our defensiveness and blame game. And if we can bring it back to really honest looking at ourselves, it shifts immediately. And then I sit down, I go, God, I can see I reacted so strongly to what you did, and I still feel a bit hurt by the way that you behaved, but I can see that I wanted to punish you for that. And that punishment is, I really want to withdraw the punishment right now. There may be some more things we want to look at, but my aggression came up and I just wanted to make you wrong in that moment. And actually, when I look a little bit deeper, I feel myself softening right now. And it takes me back to moments in my past. And I might start talking about those moments in the past where that connects to, and I see this as a lifelong pattern, you know, that I do. And then I'm talking about myself. I'm not with my finger pointing out at the other person, trying to find resolution about the other person having their boat sunk and being totally, you know, repentant for the grievous injury that they've caused me.
and it's just, I hit a really important point as well, isn't it? Because if one thinks about it, in that moment where we're disagreeing and we're right and they're wrong, and we're in a kind of character assassination mode of the other person, do we really want to destroy our beloved to the point that they are a kind of a wreck on the floor begging for forgiveness from how terrible they play? It's a strange thing that in those moments of defensiveness or those moments of attack, the objective we're trying to get to is not actually what we really want.
Exactly, because when we're in that reactive attack, I mean, and this goes deep into the shadow stuff, because then we have to start to look at our relationship to frustration, anger, and hate. And everybody has hate inside of them somewhere. And it's a really difficult one for people to look at. And it's a very difficult one to own. But it can, you know, so the inner work is going to take you at some point to that which you reject. Rejection is a form of hatred. I want to eliminate this from my consciousness. So I put it way down in the basement and then in the back room of the basement, you know, and how it got out and crawled up the steps and came out and started attacking right now took a very strong provocation. But what I'm left with right now is my hatred. And so that's a pretty difficult route. It takes time to navigate that one and to actually then hold and be responsible, let's say, to hatred, which is part of the shadow, and metabolize that inside. You know, it's mine and it's mine and it's mine. And I was so convinced 15 minutes ago that it was yours, it was yours, it was yours. And that's a very evolved perspective. I think it takes some time to get to know oneself and feel not so ashamed of the shadow and have some self-compassion for why that happened and how I had to learn to behave and what I had to repress and what were the consequences if that would come forth, and what did I see in my environment and decide that I want to be anything but that. And so I repress certain parts, and repression itself is an act of hatred in some way, if you see hatred as something that wants to get rid of, you know, wants to eliminate. So, you know, rejection, repression, you know, denial. So it's part of the trail, because we come as full packages. And to have that compassion, like, we were conditioned. We didn't have enlightened, healthy environments that we grew up in, most likely. You know, some people definitely have more traumatic childhoods and home environments than others, and they inherit a big package from that. But it takes a lot of compassion. Wow, I really, you know, I've been looking at the world through the glasses that I put on that can gather the evidence to prove that I'm in my home environment all the time and that the behavior that I'm exhibiting is the correct one.
Yeah. You're already speaking to it, but I want to make it a bit more explicit as a theme, this idea of forgiveness, that for us to forgive ourselves, to forgive our partner. And I'd love you to say it, because I think often, particularly in popular psychology, there's this idea that forgiveness is sort of an intellectual thing that you understand it, so you let it go. And certainly my experience has been the path to true forgiveness has actually been via my hatred, my rage, my anger. In a sense, the integration of the shadow stuff we're talking about, I think, is the pathway to forgiveness. But say a bit about how do we really find that? How do we walk that path? Because it's not easy.
Well, you just said it very well, Alex, again. because it is the... For one, it's the love of the truth, which drives basically the inquiry to go in, which allows us to then kind of excavate those parts which have been rejected and denied and see and own, yeah, I do have, and create the proper circumstances for the exploration of that hatred. And this is where I think group work and therapy work can be so helpful and supportive, because these are bombs, you know, and they take a while to diffuse and to own and to really go into. And yet, that if we really love the truth and I really want to know who I am, then I'm going to go to those places. I'm going to see and understand how that has been corrupting my life in some way, how I've been acting it out. I'm going to take responsibility for that. And in that, it's going to touch me deeply, because there's going to be a lot of tears shed in that also. And in that comes a certain, instead of crucifying myself for all the horrible things that I do and then trying to hide them even more, it turns around into compassion, forgiveness, and understanding. And then that replaces the basement. Those things are held, they bring some illumination in the basement, in the shadow, you know, and they're held in the light of forgiveness and compassion. Doesn't mean that they're completely metabolized, you know, but it's like when that hateful urge or that spiteful part comes up, I'm more likely to be able to recognize it, reference it in my past. And the forgiveness that I've already had to it has changed the relationship to it, you know? And so I think forgiveness is very, very important, but it can be, there's this one thing I really don't like is false forgiveness. and I see it, it's a word that's used really a lot sometimes in growth work. And I just think it's a deeper piece than writing a letter of forgiveness to yourself. Or, I mean, that might be a really great beginning, you know, to look and take responsibility for things that we've done, but it's a deep piece of inner exploration with the shadow. But my experience is that it really does bring a softness and a humor also. It takes a lot of energy to keep that stuff down in the basement.
Yeah. I'm mindful, Rafia, people watching this that have been tracking the journey and having a sense of the potential here, but are also wondering, well, where do they start? They're in a relationship that feels stuck and it feels stagnant, and they're resonating with what you're saying around the importance of owning these disowned places. How does one start to do that?
Generally, I mean, in my case, I was way back in the 70s, how I stumbled on becoming a therapist was through personal crisis.
Like the rest of us.
From a broken relationship where I felt like it was driving me crazy. I couldn't get out of my head. I couldn't articulate my feelings. I was completely confused. And by good grace of existence or my own intelligence or whatever, luck, I ended up doing a group process. And the first one I did was a men's bioenergetic encounter group.
You started gently then.
Yeah, I had no idea. I just thought, oh, this group thing, okay, this is pulling me. So I showed up, and within about 10 minutes.
I was going to say, how many minutes before you look for the door and try to plan your escape?
No, within about 10 minutes, they had me in the middle of the circle expressing my anger, I was very withheld on my anger. And what was driving me crazy was that I was really angry about the situation that had happened, and I'd been unable to express it. And therefore, I didn't have any strength or clarity or anything. And I can remember it like it was yesterday, walking out of that house on Calusa Avenue in North Berkeley, and feeling as I stood on the front porch, my life just changed.
Wow.
Something shifted right there. It's like I had an opening, and in that opening, a huge download of understanding happened. And all that energy was being turned against me, so that I couldn't sleep at night. I was really in a very unhappy space, and I was relieved of it. And I recognized that I had work to do on myself. And so I continued to find groups that felt like they met my need. And I found myself a therapist. And at first with that therapist, and she was a very good therapist, I was only going to her whenever I was in a crisis, which was barely frequently, but
but probably not frequently enough to actually have
it. It wasn't. And so then finally, I mean, I have to say, I had some kind of guidance happening. I realized that the only way I was really going to make this work, or where it was going to work for me, was to not be crisis oriented. So I paid 6 months in advance.
How interesting.
I paid 6 months, and I didn't have much money in those days either, you know. So it was like, and that was a commitment.
Yeah.
That was a huge commitment and a big statement of that I'm going for this, that I need this. And so every Wednesday morning or whatever it was, I would go, and I would go like, oh man, there's nothing going on with me. You know, I'm cool, I'm fine. Why am I doing this? And usually within 5 minutes, she would have her finger right on something. And it just became, and then I would walk out and I would be like, oh my God, this is so great. So I use myself as an example of doing both group work that I found that was appropriate to what was going on for me, and session work. And I moved through a lot, you know, and that would be a recommendation for people. And there's just so much. And even the work I was doing was kind of primitive in a way by comparison to how much the let's say the inner growth work has developed over the last 30, 40 years. You know, it's like the sensitivity, the understanding of trauma, how it works in the nervous system. There's an abundance of good work out there, which, yes, you know, you're a very good spokesperson for.
But there's something I really love about the sincerity of the recognition that I need to commit to this. And so I'm going to pay 6 months up front, and I'm going to commit. And I think really that is so often what it takes, either in one's work with themselves or one's commitment to their relationship, to say, I'm going to make this the priority of my life for this chapter.
Yeah. And that was born out of a real need, but a real recognition. Like I felt like I moved from a stumbling walk to an express train. inside myself in terms of my vitality, my creativity, my intuition, my happiness, my sexuality. All, everything started opening up, and my attractiveness to people. So then suddenly all kinds of things started to move professionally. I could see the benefit. I could realize the benefit of the work I was doing. And it was that commitment, as you say, that was like not just going for Band-Aids, but going for transformation.
Yeah.
And recognizing that I needed it and that I was coming with a full bag of stuff.
The transform.
Yeah.
That's beautiful, Rafi. I'm mindful of time, but for people that want to find out more about you, the work that you're doing, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, I have a few different things on offer right now. I mean, I have the long standby as a group called Path of Love, and that's can be found at pathretreats.com. Then I do have a training program for people who are a year-long training program for people who are interested to become counselors, and it's an accredited program, and that's called Working with People Trainings. .com, I think it's com. And
people search Rafia Working with People Trainings, they'll find it.
Yeah, they'll find it. And now recently, together with Taria Hanover, who I work with in all these other projects, we're kind of like long-time working partners. We're launching an online program called Dimensions of Being. And if you put Rafia Morgan, Dimensions of Being, that will come up, and we're going to have an initiation to essence group coming up soon. So it's possible. And then there's possible ways to contact me. I do a certain amount of sessions, but my normal focus is more in group work. COVID has made me has really polished my individual session skills.
and you're working by Zoom.
Yeah, I'm working by Zoom, and you know what? I'm amazed how much can happen actually through Zoom. How much nuanced feeling and contact and all that also comes through, even though I still have a preference for face-to-face groups.
Yeah, beautiful, Rafia. It's always a treat to spend time together. Thank you so much.
It's the same for me, Alex. Thank you for inviting me. And you're a brilliant interviewer. I always enjoy you bring out the right stuff.
Bless you. Thank you, Rafia.
Thank you.